You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war, people who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a city shining on a hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, hello, everybody. I'm Peter LaBarbera, and I'm the president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. Welcome to the Americans for Truth Hour. We are a new program on airing on WYLL in outside Chicago, and I'm very happy to be bringing you people on the front lines of the culture war. And today, I have the first of a two-part interview with a good friend of mine, a guy who really is a hero on the front lines of the culture war against the effort to normalize homosexuality, bisexuality, and transsexuality, my good friend Brian Kammacher, who is the founder of Mass Resistance, which is the leading group fighting against the gay lobby in the state of Massachusetts. Brian and I go way back. He founded Mass Resistance, actually under a different name. I believe it was Parents' Rights Coalition, back in 1995. But we've been through a lot together, and Brian has a lot to teach not just people in Massachusetts, but the whole country about this incredibly difficult battle against the effort to normalize perversion. Brian, welcome.
Hi, Pete. Good to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to have you on the show, and we have a lot to discuss. Tell us, how the heck did you get involved in this particular battle? I know you weren't always a professional pro-family activist.
Well, I guess I got involved locally in my town, and back in 1993, and the Archbishop of Boston, Cardinal Law, at one point called a meeting of statewide, statewide pro-family people, not activists, but college professors and, other people, religious people, and included a couple of activists, and one of them was me, to talk about the challenges of the culture war. And that group sort of evolved into a statewide pro-family group, and I was chosen to be the leader of it. And that was in 1993, and in the following year, we drafted the Parents' Rights Bill for the Massachusetts legislature, and it was a terrible battle to get it passed. But that's how everything got started, and it sort of moved since then.
Now, you had some experiences with your own daughter's school at first, wasn't it? Some activism on the left-wing activism in your daughter's school?
Yeah. There was, what do they do? They... actually at the time my daughter was in first grade, and she's now out of college. And the one of the neighbors, I was at a neighbor's house, and one of the neighbors had a curriculum of the sixth grade, what they called the living and learning curriculum, which was sort of like sex ed, but they weren't really sure. And it had gross, disgusting descriptions of homosexual sex acts. And the sixth grade teacher, it was the teacher's guide for that class. And I just didn't believe it. I thought that it was phony. And so the two of us went to a school committee member, and the school committee said, "Oh yes, that's what we're doing. This is what parents want." And we went to the superintendent of the schools, and he had his own copy. And he said, "Oh yes, this is what we're doing, and if you don't like it, you should send your kids to a private religious school." And we went to the school committee, and when I started reading it, which I was given a chance, to speak, they abruptly stopped me and said that they didn't have to explain what they were doing, and unless I left immediately, that I would be arrested. I saw the videotape of that because it was on cable TV. And then the next day I was in the newspaper, and the gays started attacking me. And I was just this guy.
You're just speaking up, and you're encountering this terrible arrogance, like the school committee always knows what's best, and the parents want it. But most parents, of course, had no clue that that was being taught, right?
Right, yeah. And at that point, the school committee member told the press that people should stay away from me because I'm a Christian fundamentalist.
And, of course, Jewish.
I'm Jewish, yeah. And, you know, all this stuff started happening, and I was being attacked by, gay activists, and they would have this headline in the paper, "School officials fear religious right targeting schools," and they meant me. and I just refused. I guess I just refused to back down. I mean, you know, the fascinating thing about all of this, looking back, is if they had just said to me, "Well, you know, maybe we're going a little too far. We'll look into this and do something about it." Even if they didn't do anything, I would have been mollified and said, "Fine." But no, they had to attack me, you know, and that's how they deal with any kind of criticism of what they're doing, is by attacking people.
They want to demonize and ostracize the parents who are in the lead, and sort of get them out of the way. They really don't want the public to know, first of all, what's being taught. You present a terrible threat to them in that area.
Well, and we even did worse. I mean, we did something that is terrible and inexcusable. We ran people for school committee. And, I thought they were, the Planned Parenthood came in and started a pack against our candidates. And the local paper did an editorial called "Stealth Candidates," suggesting that one of our candidates that wasn't talking to the press was actually going to impose creationism on the schools. Now, the truth is that this lady was this grandmother who was just was so afraid of what was going on that, she'd never done anything like this before. But they spread all of this, stuff pretty much that they just made up. And
now, how did you, explain, to the uninitiated, how does it get to the point where school districts are actually rationalizing the teaching of explicit deviant acts and homosexual instruction to grade schoolers? How did we get to that point in America?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think that the school system has long been infiltrated by the extreme left. I guess my own theory on this is, when I was a kid, going to school, say in the 50s, before the teachers' unions and before all of that, there were very strict rules, but it was hard to become a school teacher. You had to have a certain moral standing, and they were pretty tight as to who they let do it. And I just remember that. In fact, most of the women who did it were single women who were older. And I remember all my elementary school teachers were Miss This and Miss That, and it was really hard to do. And then in the 60s, when they took prayer out of the schools, and when the teachers' union became powerful, the whole thing opened up. And anybody could, get in, and they couldn't be fired. And a whole different type of person became in the schools. You had, liberal activists. And for some reason, the schools have become sort of a magnet for homosexuals. And I would say that in the town where I live, there's probably 10 or 20 times as many homosexuals as school teachers and principals as there are in the general population.
You're in Newton, Massachusetts, the home of Barney Frank.
Home of Barney Frank. But I think that that's reasonably common in most places. And in the old days, that just wouldn't have happened. But not only are they homosexuals, but they're homosexual activists. They're people who are openly proselytizing about homosexuality. And it was, I mean, it just wouldn't have been allowed. Because the thing is kids at these ages are very vulnerable emotionally, psychologically, and parents wanted people with sort of strong values running things. And I can remember in my elementary school, they would have prayers before all events, and this is a public school, and they had, it was a comfortable place to be.
Right. Well, now they call the teachers change agents.
Yeah.
That's how the left thinks of what a teacher should do.
Right. And the teachers' unions are pretty radical organizations themselves. And it's just like a whole new class of people are there. And I think it's to the huge detriment of kids. So that's what I think happened.
And parents, have found this out. I mean, people like you get involved because they usually hear of some atrocity in the schools. I mean,
yeah.
Right? And we'll talk more about that after the break. But, there's been so many all across the country. It breeds activists like you, Brian. It's just a continuing problem. It gets worse and worse. We're talking to Brian Kammacher, the founder of Mass Resistance, one of the most effective pro-family activists in the country. I'm Peter LaBarber with Americans for Truth About Homosexuality and the Americans for Truth Hour. Our website is americansfortruth.org. We'll be back with Brian Kammacher after the break. Everybody, this is Peter LaBarbera of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. You're listening to Americans for Truth Hour on WYLL. We are a group, Americans for Truth, that is a single-issue group dedicated to opposing and exposing the homosexual activist movement. It's a lonely job. There's not many of us on our side compared to the huge number of, quote, gay, unquote, activists on the other side. We are outnumbered. We are outspent tremendously by the GLBT, which stands for Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Movement. And yet we possess one thing that they lack completely, and that's the truth. We know that homosexual behavior is wrong. We know that people can overcome homosexuality. We've already interviewed an ex-homosexual on the Americans for Truth Hour, Pete Lines, a good friend. And, we know that the idea that people are sort of born gay and that's their basic identity. It's, quote, who they are, as we often hear, the gay activists say, is a myth. It's an entire movement built on sand. And, Brian, are you hopeful that we can turn the tide against this incredible effort to celebrate and normalize homosexuality? Are you hopeful that things are going to turn around just like they sort of turned around on the abortion issue?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not really convinced that it's turned around on the abortion issue, but that's a different thing. But I'm absolutely convinced that it will. If you look historically at these kinds of aberrations, when you've been in the midst of them, it seemed like they would never leave. I mean, just look at the Soviet Union. Nobody ever thought that would fall. Before the Civil Rights Movement, nobody thought that would change. And you could go on and on. I mean, in the 1930s, nobody thought that the rise of the Nazis would fall. And these things all not only fell, but they fell very fast. In slavery in America, I mean, nobody thought that was going, although it took a war. But I these kinds of aberrations, when you're in them, seem like it's impossible to stop. But I just don't believe that society can continue or will continue very long, doing it.
You know, and it's, I should say, I forgot to introduce you in the break. We're talking to Brian Kammacher, the founder of Mass Resistance. Their website is Mass Resistance, Mass is in Massachusetts, massresistance.org. Brian, you do such great work in chronicling the homosexual activist movement, using firsthand sources to say exactly what's going on, and I commend you. I encourage everybody to go to that website, Mass Resistance is Brian's. Mine is AmericansForTruth.org. We're both in the business of exposing and opposing the homosexual activist movement. And Brian, you described in the last segment about, how you sort of got into this. How did Mass Resistance grow? And when did you settle on this strategy? For example, when there was a so-called gay youth pride march, you would be out there videotaping it. I mean, did you have a sense that just the average Joe or Jane in Massachusetts had no clue as to how radical the gay youth school movement had become?
Well, the way we got the Parents' Rights Bill passed in the mid-90s was by exposing what was going on. And we only had one side of one page of a list of stuff, and that was enough. And what we found was that first of all, as you said, nobody really knew this stuff was going on. Nobody was exposing it. It was necessary and it was effective. And so we began doing that, and the other pro-family groups were very reluctant to get involved with that, and in fact, still are. So it's absolutely necessary. It's not. It's difficult. You're put in some pretty sketchy situations by doing it. But
that's an understatement. I mean, you're exposing things. It comes back to the old. I call it the catch-22 of our struggle, which is you need to expose the behavior. We don't hate people. We don't oppose people. We oppose behavior that is destructive and changeable. And yet, when you do try to expose the behavior, it's like, oh, that's I don't want to hear about that. So it's a tough thing, but it's absolutely necessary. You need to show people what's going on. I mean, just describe some of the highlights or lowlights, I should say, of some of the things you exposed in Massachusetts schools. Yeah, I mean, quite a litany.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where to start. As I said, most of it involves the homosexual movement's activities with children. From the infamous Fistgate things involving Glisten and the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, the group that puts up the the Gay Straight Alliances in the schools are founded by Kevin Jennings.
Now let's back up there, Brian. You're talking about an incident that you were had the foremost role in, which is called by conservatives Fistgate. It concerns explain what happened. We know that GLSEN is the leading homosexual group. GLSEN stands for the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, the leading homosexual activist group pushing for the acceptance of homosexuality, bisexuality, and transsexuality in schools. It's a family show, although we air late at night, but explain as best you can what Fistgate was all about and how it happened.
Oh, man. Well, there's this group, a national group, GLSEN, Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, that essentially is a network of homosexual active teachers and administrators that set up these gay clubs in the schools called Gay Straight Alliances. And it was founded in Massachusetts, and at the time, an enormous amount of Massachusetts taxpayer money was funding this activity. And they would put on all kinds of gay-related activities for the entire schools and things like that. And every year this group would have, and still does, a statewide conference to train teachers how to push homosexuality in further into the schools. And, at various times we would go to these conferences undercover. Now, the public was actually invited, so we didn't do anything that they would have preferred that we didn't go, but they did invite the public. And we would go to these things and report as to what we saw. Well, in the year 2000, we went, and at the, you know, as an afterthought, I said to Scott Whiteman, who was going, I said, take a tape recorder in case you're in one of these workshops and you, you know, something comes up. And so he went to a couple of workshops and just turned on his tape recorder, and it was the most gross, disgusting thing that you've ever heard.
Basically, homosexual activists discussing perverse acts to underage kids.
Yeah, basically, that's what they were describing homosexual sex acts and how to do them to kids as young as 12. And I mean, it was, if you hear it, I mean, it makes you sick just to hear it. And what he did was he taped it. And
this is a parent who did that, not a parent, but a conservative who had a tape recorder in his pocket.
Probably. Yeah, he actually was a parent.
Yeah.
And when we listened to the tape, I mean, it was unbelievable. And we released the tape. It was played on the local radio stations and on TV stations. And it, because part of the thing was this conference was co-sponsored by the State Department of Education. Public school teachers were there.
You couldn't make this stuff up, Brian.
No, you can't. It had a big welcoming letter from the Commissioner of Education, and it was a firestorm when the tapes were released, the reaction of the homosexual activists was sort of interesting. I mean, first of all, the tapes sounded they sounded like we could have just made them up, but the gays admitted that they were that the tapes were legitimate and that actually happened, and their response was to try to sue me to claiming that I had broken some Massachusetts wiretapping law or something, and to try to keep the tapes from ever being heard by anybody.
And then a judge stepped in, right?
Yeah. Well, the first thing we did was we had a huge event at the Massachusetts State House where we said anybody that came would get free tapes. And right before, we distributed a copy to every member of the legislature, and they came in and they presented me with a subpoena from a judge, and they took all the copies of the tapes, and they even took them from the legislators. So the judge, you know, put a gag order on all of this, and it was so absurd and ridiculous that Alan Dershowitz, you know, the liberal lawyer, went on the radio taking my side and saying that was stupid, that it was a First Amendment issue.
So a judge gets an injunction to stop distribution of a tape,
yeah,
which actually exposed what Massachusetts students were exposed to in a session,
right,
sponsored by the state, featuring state education leaders, people in the state education system, and sponsored by the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network.
Right, right. And it was so absurd that Fox News in New York came to Boston on a lawsuit to stop the injunction. They sent their lawyers.
Well, we'll pick back up on this, but we're talking with Brian Kammacher, who's the founder of Mass Resistance, one of the leading pro-family organizations in the nation fighting the gay agenda. I'm Peter LaBarbera with the Americans for Truth Hour. We'll be back in a second. Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarbera of the Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. We're a single-issue group devoted to exposing and opposing the powerful, quote, gay movement. And I'm thrilled to be talking to one of my personal heroes and a good friend, Brian Kammacher, who's the founder of Mass Resistance, one of the most effective pro-family organizations fighting the homosexual lobby. And Brian, we're getting a rare interview with Brian where he talks about this incredible all that he's been through in trying to expose evil in Massachusetts. And Brian gets a lot of flack, even from good people on our side, because there's a lot of people who can't handle the truth on this issue. And so, you know, they sort of don't understand people like Brian, who are just trying to do everything they can to tell the truth about what's actually going on. And I think if the American people actually did know what was going on regarding homosexuality in schools, there would be a revolution against the education system, which is why the liberal media and liberal activist groups fight to keep it hidden. They don't want parents to know. And Brian is one of the most effective people in exposing what's going on. So, Brian, let's go. We're back at the GLSEN event. This is we're talking about this scandal in 2000 called Fistgate, which was about a terrible workshop that was given to Massachusetts students. And with the help of Brian, a parent had a tape recorder. He secretly taped this session, and rather than just come out and say, boy, we really made a big mistake, we should never have had this awful talk in which kids were exposed to perversion, instead, Brian, they made you the issue, and they did a lawsuit. You were sued by a homosexual activist group because of this incident, right?
Well, Scott and I were actually sued twice, concurrently by GLAAD and by, let's see.
Explain what GLAAD is.
Oh, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, this publicly funded homosexual legal group, and also the three activists who were giving the workshop were fired, and so
these are all homosexual activists in Boston.
I have to assume they're homosexual activists. Yeah, they are. They haven't denied that, and. So they also sued us at the same time. So they were both suing us, and it was horrible.
Now this happened, but the actual scandal happened in 2000. When did you get sued?
Very, very quickly after that.
And part of the lawsuit's purpose was to silence you and make sure that those tapes were not listened to by legislators and the public, right?
Yeah, and they wanted to. They wanted to, you know, get all this monetary damages and all of this stuff. So they really, you know, they wanted to make it so that nobody would ever do this again.
Let me start right here, Brian. At this point, the listeners, you have to understand, the average person would just collapse at this point and basically say, okay, that's it. But Brian has a rare quality in that he's tenacious and he has incredible courage. And Brian, you never capitulated to any of their demands on this, did you?
No, you know, the suit went on for years, and it was terrible. I went through several lawyers, who wanted to capitulate, and Scott Lively, you know, moved out of state.
And, oh, you mean Scott Whiteman?
I mean Scott Whiteman. I'm sorry.
And Scott Whiteman was the guy who had the secret tape.
He moved out of state, and he ended up making a deal with them that they would let him out of the suit if he promised never to release the tape or use them in any way. And so he got out. But they wanted to make the same deal with me, but I wouldn't do it. And eventually I did make a settlement, but it was 100% in my favor. And so I can use the tapes any way I want, and I have no restrictions.
And so right now the tape is up on the Mass Resistance website at massresistance.org. You can listen to this awful, awful session, which young children were exposed to. And Brian, isn't it true that the homosexual group GLSEN, they were more concerned about the alleged student privacy of those kids than they were about what the kids were exposed to?
Well, you know, I don't even think they were interested in that. It was all a bunch of lies. I mean, let me give you an example. Is when the initial judge did the injunction against this. What he said that he had a daughter that was 17, and that this 17-year-old girl was basically saying that she didn't want her voice heard. And so he said, you know, I have a daughter. I wouldn't want her voice heard. And so I'm doing an injunction on this. Well, that when I heard him say that, it was very clear that he hadn't heard the tapes, because nobody's voice was discernible. Among the kids, it was only among the people who had been leading the thing, and it turned out that the 17-year-old girl, I think one of the reasons why they ended up settling was it became clear that she probably wasn't even there that day, that they had just dragged her out there because they needed somebody.
Right.
And so she probably...
Are you implying that liberals would actually lie in court?
What a shock.
I can't believe it.
And so first of all, the judge obviously didn't hear the tape because none of the kids' voices were discernible. And secondly... She probably wasn't there at all, and
so they're desperate to keep this tape, yeah. which shows a gay activist funded by the government, co-sponsored by the Massachusetts Department of Education, explaining how to engage in these incredibly perverse, deviant acts, but they don't really express the concern about the students, what the students were exposed to, and it just shows you the heart. This shows you the heart of the movement, the gay education movement.
Oh yeah, yeah. They. I mean, one of the people who did it and got fired told the gay newspaper that she would do it again. That she thought she was doing a good thing.
You're talking about one of the people who taught the session.
Yeah. Margot Abels was her name.
Yeah.
And she went on in the newspaper saying that she thought she was doing a good thing and that she would do it again if she had the chance.
Yeah. Hey, can I just tell a little story on this? I was involved in this too. I also talked to Scott and encouraged him to tape the session. And I remember once a Christian wrote me and said, "Why are you spreading all these myths about the gay movement? This didn't really happen." And he was basically chastising me for exaggerating the gay agenda in schools. And I just wrote him back and said, "Don't write back until you've listened to the tape." We sent him a tape, and you know, he never contacted us again. But it just goes to show you that the problem we face is that the agenda is so radical that most decent, you know, law-abiding citizens who care about their family and go to church, they can't comprehend how much evil we're dealing with.
Yeah, I know. That is a huge problem. It's, you know, I call it the concentration camp effect. In that, you know, like dealing with that issue, I mean, it was so overwhelmingly evil that your mind can't even process it. And people don't want to hear it. I mean, it's just so bad.
You get the kill the messenger treatment, right, where they sort of look askance at us because we're trying to bring them this awful truth.
Yeah.
Now tell us some other things. I know you had in your daughter's high school when she got older. It was Newton North High School. Is that what it was?
Right.
And tell us some of the things that happened there. I mean you've confronted so much in just the last 20 years. It's amazing.
Oh man.
Sorry to dredge up all these bad memories, Brian.
Yeah, I mean there's the day of. I mean one thing that they had was they had a. Transgender day where they had a woman giving an assembly to the school who had had her breasts removed so she could quote become a man and that she was taking hormones.
And this was a required session for all the students?
Well, it was de facto required. I mean, they claim that kids could get off it. But.
And this was a big event at the school. Now, how old was your daughter at the time?
I can't remember. Both my daughter and my son were in the school at the time, and I just can't remember. But, they were whatever.
And so, how did you respond to that?
Well, I didn't find out until afterwards, because it was in the school paper.
So they bring in a woman who's this radical transsexual activist,
oh, yeah.
and the lesson to the kids is, wow, this is just. another aspect of diversity.
Yeah,
we should applaud this sort of thing.
And they handed out a pamphlet such as, if you haven't had sex with someone of your own gender, how do you know you wouldn't like it? Things like that. And we would get this stuff. And you know, I remember before my daughter went into the school, the summer before, the principal called me to her office. And she knew who I was. And she said, you know, Mr. Kammacher, would you please do me a favor? And I said, what is it? And she said, could you please give me the courtesy of coming to me before you go to the press with anything that happens here? And I said to her, no, I won't. I said, if you don't want me to go to the press, don't do anything the press would be interested in.
Right. Well, reading, writing, and arithmetic and history, that's boring stuff compared to transgender awareness day, right?
I said, you know, I mean, if my dad had shown up at my school and gone to the press with everything, they would have yawned.
Well, we're talking to Brian Kammacher, who's a good friend of mine. He's the founder of Mass Resistance. The website is massresistance.org. Brian is one of the most effective exposers of the radical homosexual agenda, especially in schools. You're listening to WYLL, the Americans for Truth Hour, and we'll be back after the break. Hello, everybody. I'm Peter LaBarbera. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. My group is Americans for Truth. We are a single-issue group devoted to opposing the homosexual activist movement. And I'm happy to be here with talking to my good friend Brian Fitzpatrick's another friend of mine. Brian Kammacher is the founder of Mass Resistance. The website is Mass Resistance, as in Massachusetts Resistance. .org. He's a great warrior in the pro-family movement who's done so much to help turn back the homosexual activist movement. Brian, we've talked about some of your experiences, what you've seen, how you got into this whole struggle. Tell us some of the lessons you've learned. We're going to be talking to you again next week, but give us some hope. I mean, tell us some success stories, and what are some of the key ways in which you actually stopped state funding for this radical gay youth agenda, and give people some hope about how to fight this incredible aggressive movement in schools.
Well, their approach is lies and fear. I mean, to put it bluntly, and if you're not afraid and willing to tell the truth, you can accomplish anything. They want to demonize you. They want to, they they are willing to tell any lie whatsoever. I mean, no lie is too small. I mean, I can even remember in my son's elementary school where they were doing something, and we'd have parents call up to ask about it, and they would tell every parent that they were the only one that had complained.
This is in schools where they encourage kids to be honest and have integrity.
Yeah.
Oh, brother.
And don't be afraid to be angry. You know, I mean, this is the other thing, is everybody on our side wants to be nice and reasonable. Well, if you don't pretend like this is important, then they're not going to think it's important. You have a certain sense of urgency about this, and it's amazing what you can accomplish, and not being afraid to tell the truth. And if you're not willing to do that, then this stuff is going to happen.
I mean, you have to be. Of course, they're going to lie. I can't even think of how many lies have been told about you and me. I mean, the homosexual activists have nicknamed me Porno Pete because we've exposed some sordid homosexual events, and so as if I have some sort of prurient interest in this issue. It's just unbelievable. But like you say, you persevere and you just do it, and your leadership has led to some great victories. You successfully defunded. Did you defund the gay education programs in Massachusetts, or what's the status on that, Brian?
Well, let's see. What it is that the state funding for these programs we were able to persuade the legislature to lower it to zero by just an enormous amount of outrage by people. And that's what it takes. It takes outrage. And if you're not willing to be, if you're not willing to confront officials, then this stuff is going to happen.
Did you have the examples of what had been gone on in the schools? You showed what happened with this money, this Massachusetts taxpayer money being spent to promote this so-called gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender agenda.
Oh yeah, yeah. And we just went after these guys, the legislators, and said, no, you're not going to do this to our kids.
How much funding were we talking about?
Oh, the year before they got $800,000.
That was in 2009. They got $800,000.
Yeah.
And has that been zeroed out, or where does it stand now?
2008 and then 2009, they got zero.
Oh, that's tremendous. Congratulations on that. Now they're trying to put money back in, right?
Yeah, but I'm not sure that it's going to work because we're back there.
Now, this is in Massachusetts, folks, so if you can win in Massachusetts, you can win anywhere in the country. Brian, we're going to be back again next week, but talk about this thing that you've got now. We're pre-taping here. The date is the 10th, Wednesday of March. 10th of March. Tell us about this radical bill that you've just found out is coming down the pike in Massachusetts, which actually threatens to censor opposing views about transsexuality.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a bill before the Senate that's sort of like these Canadian kinds of bills, where they want to put not only censor it, but if you criticize the homosexual agenda, they want to make it a crime punishable by jail time and fines.
How is it worded, the bill?
Let's see, where is it here? Let me just find it.
This is a bill about bullying, so it's ostensibly about keeping kids from being bullied on the basis of...
Whoever publishes any false material, whether written, printed, electronic, televised, or broadcast, with intent to maliciously promote hatred of any group of persons in the Commonwealth because of race, color, religion, national origin, ancestry, sex, sexual orientation, or disability, shall be guilty of libel and shall be punished by a fine of not more than $1,000 or by imprisonment for more than 1 year or both. So,
wow.
That's pretty hardcore.
So imagine how the left might interpret that. If you say that homosexual behavior is immoral or it's homosexual acts are perverse, you could be charged under that provision.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what they want.
And how did this work its way into a bullying bill? It's
What I think it is that the committee, the education committee, they just don't like us because we have testified, in pretty strong terms about the homosexual agenda in the public schools, and so I think that's sort of where this happened, how this happened. And they sort of in the middle of the night added this to the bill, which is going to be voted on very soon.
So in our next interview, we'll have the results here. But basically, Brian, what you did was you read the bill.
Yeah.
And you found this. Most people, even most legislators, don't read these bills.
Right.
And I hope that you're going to be successful in stopping this, but it shows you, the homosexual activists say they don't want to censor opposing views, but of course, here they turn around and they put it right in a bill.
Yeah.
When you're doing these fights, do people just naturally come to you when, how do you recruit people into your movement? Is it something that just has just grown over the years?
Yeah, pretty much. People hear what we're doing and get a hold of us.
Well, We've got about 30 seconds for you, Brian, but tell us, and before we'll talk to you next week, but again, give people some hope for the guy who's sort of sitting on the fence saying, should I get involved? What would you tell him when he finds out something like something terrible is going on in his school?
Well, it's a good thing to get involved with a group like yours or ours, because it's very difficult to do it by yourself. And the average person, you know, has certain assumptions as to how things work that are just not effective, but there are effective ways. And, yeah, I think that if you stand up to these guys, it's like the Tea Party thing. You will win eventually. So I would say, you know, don't despair.
Well, we will not despair, and we are happy to be talking to Brian Kammacher of Mass Resistance. We'll be talking to him again next week. I'm Peter LaBarber with the Americans for Truth Hour. We're on every week, and we are interviewing frontline people who are battling the culture war. Our website is Americans for Truth. We'll talk to you next week.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 1 a.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a city shining on a hill. And once again, one nation under God. Tune in at 1 a.m. next Saturday on AM 1160.